Health. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for listening to RBN, for people who can handle the truth. To see the guest schedule for this program, go to Spingola.com, click on the radio schedule button, choose the year and month, and you will see a list of the guests, together with links to their websites. For questions or comments during today's program, email Spingola1 at yahoo.com. My regular email is Deanna@Spingola.com. As you know, RBN is having a pledge drive. You may help by contributing to the pledge drive. Just call 800-724-2719. You may also support RBN by purchasing products from the RBN website, including business cards or bumper stickers. You can also subscribe to the archives at a higher rate than the usual $1.33 per month. Or you can purchase some advertising if you have a product or a service. You may do all of this by calling 800-724-2719 or going to republicbroadcasting.org. Naperville Smart Meters Group is demonstrating against the local city officials and their insistence on installing smart meters in Naperville, Illinois, a suburb that is relatively close to me. They are having this demonstration on Sunday, April 15th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at Naperville Municipal Center. That's located at 400 South Eagle Street. Now, the recent and blatant disregard for the residents' property has changed the face of the smart meter debate in Naperville. And certainly this could impact what the rest of us are trying to do in other areas of the country or even in Canada, because I know they're fighting them up there also. So if you believe that you have a right to protect your family and home, keep a class 2B carcinogen off your home, maintain your personal property rights, maintain privacy in your home, then, you know, you should be interested in this, whether it's happening in Naperville or whether it is happening in your own community. It is something that we really, really do need to address. My guest today was going to be Jonathan Azaziah, but he had a family situation come up, so he was not able to join us. He will be joining us on Monday. So today we're going to be talking about something, the Holocaust, which is, you know, Holocaust Memorial Day is coming up next week. And so I just want to talk about it today, and I will also be addressing some more next week on that particular day. Sometime back, I ran into a website. I didn't run into, but I located a website, and it was created by a James Miller, and he lives in Los Angeles, California, and he wrote this very succinct article about the Holocaust. He said, "What was the Holocaust? What actually happened?" And of course, I also recommend Victor Thorne's book on the Holocaust, and we had him on the program last week, and so his book is an excellent book. But this article that Jim Miller has written is just very short, right to the point. I'm going to go over that article with you, and then we will talk about some of the things that led up to this period of time, some of the things that were happening in the 60s, and try and connect to what is going on in the Middle East today with regards to Iran. Okay, here is the article. He wrote it on November 23rd, 2011. Over the past 20 years, we're going to go to a break, so I'll pick it up on the other side of the break, but he did write it very recently, and in fact, I have not linked it on today's date, but I will do that so that you can access the article after today. So I will do that. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The Freeze-Dry Guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze-Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. Doctors who have tried Heart and Body Extract with their patients are thrilled with the results as well. Here's what Dr. Goodman has to say about his experience with the product.
If you notice that most times you hear these drug ads on TV, they have a list of possible side effects. I find that if you're going to take something that is, you're trading one problem for five or six other problems, that to me doesn't make sense. And using something that is natural, that is absorbed into the body, particularly because it's in a liquid form, I think is the best way to go.
Call to order your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and I'm going to relate to you an article that was written by James Miller and on November 23rd, 2011, and the title is, What Was the Holocaust? What Actually Happened? Over the past 20 years, I have read, with a very open mind, roughly 40 books on the Holocaust. So just what exactly was the Holocaust? What happened during that period? During World War II, Germany rounded up millions of civilians, both Jews and non-Jews, who could be potential saboteurs, belligerents, spies, messengers of the enemy, subversives, etc. Germany put them in camps whilst the war was going on. At the end of the war, Germany planned to move them elsewhere, assuming Germany had won World War II. With regard to the Jews, Hitler had considered moving them to Madagascar. Yes, you read that correctly, Madagascar. With that said, and despite what Jewish-dominated Hollywood has been peddling for the past several decades, there was never, I repeat, never a plan to kill the Jews of Europe. Hitler's final solution was a plan to relocate Jews out of Europe. It was not a plan to exterminate them. This distinction cannot be emphasized enough. As it turned out, the vast majority of such potential subversives were, in fact, Jews. Why? Because Jews were overwhelmingly leftist, communist, Marxist, etc. And thus, many were naturally sympathetic to the USSR. For these reasons, Jews couldn't be trusted. Hence, they were put in secured camps along with anyone of any religion, creed, ethnicity, race, nationality, who may potentially engage in subversive activities. Homosexuals were put in not because they were homosexual, but rather because homosexual are almost universally, politically speaking, leftist. Thus, homosexuals were put in the camps because of their subversive politics, not because of their sexuality. Incidentally, the U.S. did the exact same thing with the Japanese and, to a lesser extent, German and Italian Americans. FDR put them in camps because they couldn't be trusted during the war. The U.S. was, of course, fighting against Japan, Germany, and Italy. Further, the practice of rounding up potential belligerents and holding them in camps is extremely common during war. You will find this to be true when studying the history of warfare from the ancient Greeks, ancient Chinese, you name it. Rounding up potential belligerents has always been a common practice during war, all throughout recorded history. So, what about all these Jews who allegedly died in and around the camps? Well, the majority who died did so in the final months of the war, perhaps 600,000 at most. In late 1944 and early 1945, the Allies were bombing Germany into the Stone Age. Roads, bridges, rail lines, etc. were destroyed, and hence, Germany could no longer supply the various internment camps with food and medicine. The result? A lot of people died of disease and starvation, both in the camps and all throughout Germany, including huge numbers of German civilians. Regarding the gas chambers, yes, there were indeed gas chambers, but they were used to disinfect the prisoners and their clothes as a measure to prevent typhus from spreading. Cyclone B was the chemical used for this purpose. It was the standard disinfectant chemical used in Europe at that time. Jews have manipulated this in claiming that, and I quote, Nazis gassed 6 million Jews to death, unquote. Absolute nonsense. There is no evidence of this, none. What tourists are shown at Auschwitz is easily refuted. For example, the lone gas chamber at Auschwitz, shown to tourists, was built by the Soviets after the war for propaganda purposes. The Polish government had acknowledged this. Auschwitz is in Poland, not Germany. Regarding the Eastern Front, it is indeed true that many Jews were killed there. After Germany invaded the USSR in June 1941, they encountered, in addition to the Soviet troops, tens of thousands of partisan fighters, mostly Jewish. In response to this, Germany created the Eisengruppen, which was tasked with finding these partisans and capturing and or killing them. Thus, these were not innocent Jews in the context of war. They were Soviet supporters, i.e. partisans, engaging in guerrilla warfare against the German troops. That's what happened. That's the truth about the Holocaust. But Jews have grossly exaggerated the Jewish death toll, they claim 6 million, and turned the Holocaust, as they call it, into a marketing tool, selling to the public Jewish victimhood, which garners world Jewry tremendous sympathy. Any psychologist will tell you that people who are viewed as victims tend to get away with more than others. The Holocaust is essentially a psychological weapon which targets the Western world. In particular, it is implicitly used as an excuse for Jews to commit horrendous crimes against the Palestinians and also engage in warmongering against many Muslim countries. Here we see this technique in action. The president of Israel pushing for war with Iran in order to, and I quote, prevent another Holocaust. Okay, that is a very succinct little article by Jim Miller, and I will post his URL on the website for today's program. All right, regarding, now you heard it from a Gentile, but what about hearing some words about this particular subject from an individual, and most of what I'm going to say now is from The Holocaust in American Life. It was written by Peter Novick, N-O-V-I-C-K, in 2000. And before I get to his work, let me just say that during the 1960s, Ilya Ehrenberg's articles about World War II incited severe controversies in West Germany. Ehrenberg and Vasily Grossman war reporters for the Red Army edited, along with the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee, the JAC, and members of the American Jewish Community, the Black Book, The Ruthless Murder of Jews by German Fascist Invaders Throughout the Temporarily Occupied Regions of the Soviet Union and the Death Camps of Poland During the War, 1941 to 1945. Now, that's a very long title. It is considered the very, very first documentary piece about the Holocaust. Grossman reported the opening of the Treblinka and Majdanek camps and provided the first eyewitness accounts as early as 1943. Officials distributed his article, The Treblinka Hell, at the Nuremberg trials as a document for the prosecution. In 1946, Ehrenberg and Grossman wrote the two-volume set, Murder of the People, and they wrote it in Yiddish and presented it to the JAC with copies to the U.S., the British Mandate of Palestine, and Romania. Editors in the U.S. published excerpts under the title Black Book. The Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, Israel, has a handwritten manuscript. Okay. Now, this is from the book, The Holocaust in American Life, which also talks about what happened during the 60s. And as I said, he wrote this book in 2000, but it's a book that probably the general population would not read. Well, I feel like if you're going to find out what they're thinking, read what they are writing. And so that is what I do quite often. And I quote, "It has become a commonplace in recent years that Israel and the Holocaust are the twin pillars of the American Jewish civil religion. The symbols that bind together Jews in the United States, whether they are believers or non-believers, on the political right, left, or center. But through the mid-1960s, Israel, like the Holocaust, didn't loom that large in American Jewish consciousness, at least not in public expressions of that consciousness. In the late 60s and early 70s, Israel became much more important to the American Jews, and in a set of spiraling interactions, concern with Israel was expressed in ways that evoked the Holocaust and vice versa. Now, despite their increasing prosperity, American Jews' donations to Israel steadily declined throughout the years before 1967. In a study conducted in the late 1950s, Jews in a Midwestern suburb were asked what kinds of behaviors were essential to be considered a good Jew. Support Israel was listed by 21%, compared to 58% who said that they should help the underprivileged. So it wasn't all that important in the late 1950s. After the establishment of Israel had provided a home for survivors of the Holocaust, there was a marked decline in the extent to which Israel and the Holocaust were connected in Jewish public discourse. To be sure, the Holocaust sometimes figured in fundraising appeals for Israel, but this was much less true in the 50s and early 60s than it had been in the late 40s. And then it would be from the late 60s forward. On the one hand, Israeli leaders claimed a certain symbolic ownership of the Holocaust. One assertion of this claim was the plan at Yad Vashem to grant posthumous Israeli citizenship to all those killed in Europe. Israeli ownership was reasserted at the time of the Eichmann trial. Now, that was in 1961. Israel, Ben-Gurion said, and I quote, is the heir of the 6 million, the only heir. If they had lived, the great majority of them would have come to Israel, unquote. Okay, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
As business becomes more difficult, control of cash and the ability to borrow becomes critical. Working capital cash is your greatest insurance and guarantee of financial stability in these uncertain times. Equipment leasing allows you to obtain the income-producing equipment that your business needs and pay for it with tax-free, ever-devaluing dollars. Money that you've already earned and paid taxes on should be sparingly used. That is your reserve capital, safety net. We are also able to buy and lease back equipment that you already own and have depreciated, thereby making more cash available for your present-day needs. For a complete, comprehensive explanation as to how this financial truth will benefit your business future, call Bob New Incorporated at 888-639-2621. 888-639-2621. Keep your working capital cash reserves and borrowing capability. 888-639-2621.
The Get Prepared Expo is coming. Practical advice, affordable solutions. Get Prepared Expo with KWTO's Vincent Finelli. Ozark Empire Fairgrounds, Springfield, Missouri. Over 125 seminars and exhibits. The biggest and best preparedness expo in the USA. Saturday and Sunday, April 28th and 29th. Discount $8 passes and $15 weekend passes available now at GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com. Prepare and survive right now at GetPreparedExpo.com. Mothers, fathers, grandmothers, and grandfathers all over the world are worried. World-renowned experts predict economic collapse and war. The time to prepare is now. Don't miss the Get Prepared Expo with KWTO's Vincent Finelli. Ozark Empire Fairgrounds, Springfield, Missouri. Saturday and Sunday, April 28th and 29th. The biggest and best preparedness expo in the USA. Discount $8 passes and $15 weekend passes available now at GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Deanna, and I am reading selections from The Holocaust in American Life by Peter Novick. He is a Jew, and so we are getting his perceptions about what was going on, and he had some very good footnotes and sources. So at about the same time, several factors worked to minimize Israel's association with the European catastrophe. The way Israel represented itself before the 60s downplayed the Holocaust, looked to the future rather than the past, emphasized the discontinuity between the debased life of Jews in the diaspora and the stalwart new Jews of Israel. Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, was largely ignored, and school textbooks paid little attention to the Holocaust. In those years, Israelis were as little inclined as American Jews to present Jews as victims. The image of Israel held by most American Jews was not a land of memory-haunted survivors, but one typified by bronzed, blue-eyed young sabres, singing as they marched into the fields with hoes over their shoulders, making the desert bloom. As is well known, the spring of 1967 was a dramatic turning point in American Jews' relationship to Israel. Less dramatically and in a less thoroughgoing way, it marked an important stage in their changing relationship to the Holocaust. In the escalating Middle East crises, Arab spokesmen proclaimed their determination, allegedly, to wipe Israel off the map and drive the Jews into the sea. One said that the surviving Jews will be helped to return to their native countries. Now, these are all comments allegedly said by the Arabs. But he added, there will be very few survivors, according to this Arab spokesperson. The great majority of American Jews, including many who had not previously shown the slightest interest in Israel, were in a state of high anxiety and plunged into a flurry of rallies and fundraising. It's making money. That's my comment, not his. In fact, Israel was hardly in serious peril. Shortly before the outbreak of war in June, President Lyndon Johnson's intelligence experts debated whether it would take a week or 10 days for Israel to demolish its enemies. But this was not the understanding of American Jews, for whom Israel was poised on the brink of destruction. And it is our perceptions of reality, not the reality itself, that shape our responses. Though there were surprisingly few explicit references to the Holocaust in American Jewish mobilization on behalf of Israel before the war, thoughts of a new Holocaust were surely present. The Holocaust for many was suddenly transformed from mere, albeit tragic, history to imminent and terrifying prospect. Within a few days, despair turned to exhilaration as Israeli forces, humiliating their combined Arab adversaries, captured Jerusalem and the West Bank from Jordan, the Golan Heights from Syria, Gaza, and the Sinai from Egypt. The Six-Day War, and even more, its anxious prelude and triumphal aftermath, effected a permanent reorientation in the agenda of organized American Jewry. Israel moved to the top of that agenda in fundraising, in lobbying, and in electoral politics. Oscar Cohen, a longtime official of the Anti-Defamation League, wrote to a friend that by the 1970s, organized American Jewry had become an agency of the Israeli government, following its directions from day to day. Popular Jewish attitudes underwent a profound Israelization. The hallmark of a good Jew became the depth of his or her commitment to Israel. Failure to fulfill religious obligations, near total Jewish illiteracy, even intermarriage, were all permissible. But lack of enthusiasm for the Israeli cause, not to speak of public criticism of Israel, became absolutely unforgivable. If American Jews' relationship to Israel, the Six-Day War was the immediate and most important cause of a new closeness. As concerns the Holocaust and the connections American Jews made between the Holocaust and Israel, it's harder to locate a single decisive moment. We have to look not just at the Six-Day War, but at the Yom Kippur War of 1973, as well as domestic developments that reinforced the impact of those events. But the Six-Day War was certainly important. The fears of a renewed Holocaust on the eve of that war left their mark on American Jewish consciousness. Also important was the way the image of Jews as military heroes worked to efface the stereotype of weak and passive victims, which, we've seen, had previously inhibited Jewish discussion of the Holocaust. There were many jokes and cartoons about turning the faltering American military effort in Vietnam over to General Moshe Dayan. All right, going to a break. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
aerial spraying, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Is Deanna, and I am reading selections from a book. It's called The Holocaust in American Life. It is by Peter Novick, N-O-V-I-C-K. He is a Jewish individual, and this was written in 2000, and basically he's explaining how they did this, how they made this alleged event in Europe work in their favor. Okay, the miraculous victory of Israel also made it easier to integrate the Holocaust into Jewish religious consciousness. For Jews with any shred of traditional religious belief, the Holocaust had posed the most serious problem. This was not simply the age-old problem of theodicy shared by all religious traditions, how one reconciles a God who is omniscient, omnipotent and benevolent with the presence of enormous suffering. For religious Jews, the problem went beyond theocracy. It was how to reconcile the Holocaust with the covenant, God's special protective relationship with the Jewish people. But in a way, that seems to have appealed to many Jews. The Six-Day War offered a folk theology of Holocaust and redemption. In Jacob Neusner's words, it was a salvation myth of the darkness followed by the light, of passage through the netherworld, then purified by suffering and by blood into the new age. The extermination of European Jewry could become the Holocaust only on June 9th, and that would be 1967, when, in the aftermath of a remarkable victory, the state of Israel celebrated the return of the people of Israel to the ancient wall of the Temple of Jerusalem. On that day, the extermination of European Jewry attained the, if not happy, at least viable ending that served to transform events into a myth and to endow a symbol with a single, ineluctable meaning. Rabbi Irving Greenberg was later to become the director of the President's Commission on the Holocaust, which recommended the building of a museum in Washington. In the aftermath of the Six-Day War, he wrote that it had given God a second chance. In Europe, he failed to do his task. The failure to come through in June would have been an even more decisive destruction of the covenant. When we heard the news of the outbreak of the war, a layman asked me, "What will we do if we lose?" My answer was, "You will find a sign outside our synagogue that we are closed." But the legacy of the Six-Day War, in particular, the triumphal mood in the period after the war, did not point unambiguously toward the centering of the Holocaust in American Jewish consciousness. The war's outcome suggested that the fears of a renewed Holocaust, though understandable, had been misplaced. It appeared to teach the radical discontinuity between the bad old days of Jewish vulnerability and a new era of Jewish invincibility. To be sure, as Jacob Neusner suggested, the Holocaust, combined with the Six-Day War, could now be integrated into a salvation myth. But such myths, in his words, tell of the old being and the new, a vanquishing of death and mourning, the passing away of former things. Had the victory of 1967 brought an end to Israel's travails, the Holocaust might have entered American Jewish consciousness in this fashion. As a subordinate, historic-sized and transcended element in a salvation myth. But that is not the way in which the Holocaust gained a central place in American Jewish consciousness. As American Jewish leaders sought to understand the reasons for Israel's isolation and vulnerability, reasons that might suggest a remedy, the explanation commanding the widest support was that the fading of the memories of Nazism's crimes against the Jews and the arrival on the scene of a generation ignorant of the Holocaust had resulted in Israel's losing the support it had once enjoyed. Among those pressing this argument were the two top officials of the Anti-Defamation League, Arnold Forster and Benjamin Epstein, who laid it out in a widely discussed book written just after the Yom Kippur War. For a long while, after World War II, sympathy for the 6 million Jewish victims of the Nazi genocide helped to open the doors long closed to Jews here and abroad. Certainly, the State of Israel was one direct beneficiary of world empathy with the Jewish victims of Nazism. In the post-war world, the time during which the non-Jewish world continued to view Jews as oppressed was incredibly short. Within 25 years after the photographs of bestiality in the concentration camps shocked the world, Jews had ceased being victims. It was the fact that the Holocaust had been forgotten, they argued. They had produced the palpable erosion in worldwide sympathy and friendship for Jews. Jews, they concluded, were acceptable to the non-Jewish world only insofar as they were perceived to be victims. When they were no longer perceived as victims, the world found this hard to take and mounted an effort to render them victims anew. We are all attracted to explanations that make clear that our troubles are someone else's fault, that we are blameless. In fact, the most important reasons for Israel's declining standing wasn't anyone's fault. By the time that Israel was established in 1948, the tide was turning. And over the next generation, this became a tidal wave as colonial empires were swept away, as a revolt of non-European peoples against Europeans in their midst became a la mode. Before 1967, all of this had had some effect on Israel's global standing, but the problem wasn't that serious. Israel had cordial relations with a number of newly independent African states. Then came its smashing victory in territorial expansion in the Six-Day War. For Jews, the victory of tiny Israel over its larger neighbors recalled David and Goliath. Israel had now established itself as the ruler of more than a million Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. Within a year of the war, Israel began the creation of facts on the ground, with even more Jewish settlements in the newly acquired lands. Israel Prime Minister Golda Meir, in words reminiscent of, and I quote, a land without people for a people without land, declared in 1969 that Palestinians didn't exist. And I believe a certain presidential candidate also repeated those words. I believe that was Newt Gingrich. There was Israel's rejection of Egyptian President Anwar Sadat's peace overtures in the early 70s. There were incidents like the Israeli attack on the Libyan airliner in early 1973, which resulted in the deaths of 100 civilian passengers. Now, before I get too far afield, but remember that it was on June 8th of 1967 that the Israelis attacked the USS Liberty, and they wanted, and Johnson wanted that ship to go to the bottom of the sea. And what that was that they were going to blame the Arabs for this attack. And any time that there are Americans who lose their lives, such as on 9/11, in the Lusitania, at Pearl Harbor, this is live bait, and it makes the rest of Americans be okay to go to war. It makes them outraged, and they're ready to do the government's bidding to go to war. But there were survivors from the USS Liberty, and they have lived to tell the story. Sympathy for Jewish survivors of the Holocaust had certainly been among the factors that in 1947 led the United Nations to promote the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine. But that decision had given equal weight to the claims of the Palestinians, which is why the UN had voted to divide the land. After 1967, and particularly after 1973, much of the world came to see the Middle East conflict as grounded in the Palestinian struggle to belatedly accomplish the UN's original intention. There were strong reasons for Jewish organizations to ignore all this, however, and instead to conceive of Israel's difficulties as stemming from the world's having forgotten the Holocaust. The Holocaust framework allowed one to put aside as irrelevant any legitimate grounds for criticizing Israel, to avoid even considering the possibility that the rights and wrongs were complex. In addition, while American Jewish organizations could do nothing to alter the recent past in the Middle East and precious little to affect its future, they could work to revive memories of the Holocaust. So the fading memories explanation offered an agenda for action. Of course, invoking the Holocaust was far from the only rhetorical strategy pursued in mobilizing support for Israel. Depending on the audience and the context, one might argue that Israel was an important strategic asset, or stress the support given to Israel's enemies by the Soviet Union. With some Christian audiences, biblical claims were effective, and the belief that talking about the Holocaust would help Israel was, as we'll see, far from the only reason there came to be so much Holocaust programming. Now remember, these are coming from the words of a Jew, telling us exactly how they accomplished this big focus on the Holocaust, because they were programming us, people. And this Holocaust programming was by Jewish organizations. It's relatively easy to find instances of the purposive introduction of the Holocaust into discussions of the Middle East. Harder to say how often the latent function of the Holocaust discourse was to firm up support for Israel. There are occasional indications. only a few months after the top officials of the Anti-Defamation League had proclaimed that it was fading memories of Nazism's crimes against the Jews that accounted for Israel's isolation, the ADL decided to embark on an ambitious venture in Holocaust programming. Its public relations consultant submitted a memorandum on the shape of the program that the shape of the program should take. The memo including by insisting that everything should be done against the background of a powerful I accuse that is now submitting its bill for sufferings rendered. Current conflicts were endowed with all the black and white moral clarity of the Holocaust, which came to be for the Israeli cause what Israel was said to be for the United States, a strategic asset. Holocaust deniers, according to David Singer of the American Jewish Committee, seek to rob the Jewish people and the state of Israel of their moral capital. The wrong interpretation of Nazi atrocities could have the same effect. Edward Alexander complained to those who universalized the Holocaust and sought to plunder moral capital that Jews had accumulated. And obviously he's talking about other people who have suffered. Well, they couldn't, you know, they weren't going to let that happen. The Jews were the only victims, correct? Back to the page here. Others complained of the kidnapping or appropriating of what it became increasingly common to call the moral capital derived from the Holocaust. The leader of one Jewish organization claimed that the presence of Christian symbols at Auschwitz could ultimately affect Israel, since much of the Jewish state's legitimacy is based on assumptions about what happened to Jews during the Holocaust. Accordingly, particular linkages were often less important than a diffuse symbolic connection. Thus, when the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, was lobbying against the sale of American aircraft to Saudi Arabia, it sent a copy of the novel based on the TV series Holocaust to every member of Congress. Wolf Blitzer, reporting on a gathering of Holocaust survivors in Washington, noted that while Israeli officials and American Jewish political activists were always careful to characterize it as a non-political event, and while there was a deliberate effort not to go too far in making the connection, they were agreed that raising public awareness of the Holocaust was bound to generate heightened sympathy and support for Israel. A similar sentiment was expressed by Hyman Bookbinder when serving as a member of President Jimmy Carter's Commission on the Holocaust. He expressed the hope that its recommendations on a memorial would contribute to sustaining and increasing an American consciousness and conscience, which is essential to maintaining our commitment to Israel. Beyond a diffuse relationship between the Holocaust and Israel's cause, specific themes were developed. One was connecting Arabs in general and Palestinians in particular with Nazism. In part, this was just a matter of rhetorical flourishes. The checkered keffiyeh of the PLO has replaced Hitler's black shirt. In part, it was a schlock fiction. In Leon Uris's Exodus, both the novel and the film, Palestinian terrorism is masterminded by an escaped Nazi in the background. In dozens of thrillers, like Frederick Forsyth's The Odessa File, unrepentant Nazis collaborate with Arabs to destroy Israel. But serious arguments were also advanced about continuity between Nazism and the Palestinian movement. The Arabs cannot pretend they played no role in the Holocaust, said I.L. Kennan, the head of APAC. The Palestinians, or many of them, wrote Leon Wistler, were Hitler's little helpers in the Middle East. The claims of Palestinian complicity in the murder of the European Jews were, to some extent, a defensive strategy, a preemptive response to the Palestinian complaint that if Israel was recompensed for the Holocaust, it was unjust that Palestinian Muslims should pick up the bill for the crimes of European Christians. The assertion that Palestinians were complicit in the Holocaust was mostly based on the case of the Mufti of Jerusalem. a pre-World War II Palestinian nationalist leader who, to escape imprisonment by the British, sought refuge during the war in Germany. The Mufti was, in many ways, a disreputable character. But post-war claims that he played any significant part in the Holocaust have never been sustained. This did not prevent the editors of the four-volume Encyclopedia of the Holocaust from giving him a starring role. They wrote just about as much about him as they did about Hitler, because they had to connect a Palestinian to the Holocaust so that they could now do what they are doing in the Middle East. Those are my words. Okay, we are going to a break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Deanna, and I'm going through some selections from a book called The Holocaust in American Life. It was written by Peter Novick, N-O-V-I-C-K. It was written in 2000. He is a Jew and is telling us how they happened to connect things together in the Middle East so that they could use the Holocaust, the alleged Holocaust to their benefit in establishing Israel and to do what they are doing in the Middle East currently. The themes in Holocaust discourse used more often than any others in support of Israel were the world's silence, the world's indifference, the abandonment of the Jews. These had been discussed from time to time since 1945, but almost exclusively in internal Jewish talk. They didn't figure much in remarks directed to a Gentile audience. This changed somewhat in 1967. During the period of anxiety before the Six-Day War, a leaflet distributed at Yale exhorted Christians that, because of their special ties to the people of Israel, they cannot again be silent when their existence is being threatened. By coincidence, 1967 saw the serialization in Look magazine of Arthur Morris's "While 6 Million Died," a searing indictment of America's wartime behavior. When Morse's book was published the following year, it was well and widely reviewed in the Jewish and general circulation press without, so far as I have found, the suggestion that its subject had any contemporary relevance to Israel's situation. Elie Wiesel, or however he pronounced it, I think it's probably Wiesel. It sounds more appropriate saying Wiesel. Elie Wiesel wrote of being, for the first time in his adult life, afraid that the nightmare may start all over again. For Jews, he said, the world has remained unchanged, indifferent to our fate. Martin Peretz thought indifference the wrong word to describe America's role during the Holocaust. It had been acquiescent and perhaps even complicity. And he warned that this might be true again if Israel was threatened with destruction. When Pope Paul met with Yasser Arafat, an editorial writer for the New Republic was reminded of the indifference of Pius the 12th, to the extermination of the Jews. The very existence of Israel was thus proof of the world's guilt. And if that guilt had been partially expiated by Israel's creation, full expiation, if such were possible, demanded continuing support for Israel. The slogan, "Never Again," was an exhortation the Jews directed at themselves. Never again, we meant, would we let others fool us, or would we fool ourselves about the intention of those who intended to destroy the Jews? And Milton Himmelfarb said this. Himmelfarb character is related to William Crystal, who is the son of two former Marxists, Irving Crystal and Gertrude Himmelfarb. And it's kind of interesting. Milton is the brother of Gertrude. So basically he is William Crystal's uncle. Alrighty, we're going to our 60-second break. We will be back after our station ID.